Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everybody, welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Matt Straub. As we hit mid-April with 2 weeks to go until the NFL draft, today we are bringing you our guys for the month of April. These are the players we would be drafting in fantasy leagues or are drafting right now if we are drafting, if that made sense. We'll be doing this every month up until the season. And today we have brought two players each that we will make the case for. I am joined by John Daigle, Danny Carter, and Pat Doherty, who I believe wanted to say something important right off the top here. Pat?
I did. Well, last week, John began the pod with, we were planning what would be like our master's meal, essentially, right? We were talking about what would be our ideal meal, basically. And I really choked on the dessert, I realized after the fact.
You did.
I said chocolate cake, which I do love chocolate cake. But the true answer, my favorite dessert by far, and I just had a brain, is pecan pie. And I'm sure that Denny probably has sickening takes on pecan pie. And for some reason, pecan pie is like a lightning rod dessert. I mean, some people complain it's just like all sugar. And, you know, Denny is like the one person in America who doesn't like sugar. But pecan pie, I don't know. I just choked. Pecan pie is by far the best American dessert. Not even close.
I will respectfully, actually, I will disrespectfully disagree. pecan pie can go straight to the trash. And I actually, one time I was on my daily jog and there was a pecan pie sitting in the middle of the street. I actually tweeted about it. This was like 3 months ago. And I thought, this is what happens. Someone buys a pecan pie and they literally toss it out the window because it's garbage. I'm sorry, Pat.
Anyone from like the Northeast megalopolis, which I would say, Denny, you live in the Northeast megalopolis, does not respect pecan pie. I was in Stamford, Connecticut, where NBC Sports is based, at NBC Sports, when something shocking happened a few years ago. It was an NFL Sunday, and there was a pecan pie set out in the break room. And I had, you know, my piece of pecan pie at like probably 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And then stunningly, I come back like 8 p.m. and the whole pie is still there. And so I got to have another piece. But I just, people from where Denny comes from, those northeastern coastal elites, just do not like
recurring
pecan
theme.
Pie.
It's like people are leaving pecan pie in the street. They're leaving it out in the break room.
Exactly.
Nobody wants
why.
It.
Wonder why, Matt. I don't know. It's hard to say why. Also, don't group me in with the Northeast. I don't know anything about the Northeast. Okay. I live in the Mid-Atlantic. Okay.
You're part of the megalopolis. It goes from DC all the way up to Boston. You're in the megalopolis.
All the way to Boston. I've never been to Massachusetts in my life. I don't know about that place.
You're in the megalopolis. Just accept it.
I'm getting rid of chocolate cake if that's the case, Pat. We're putting creme brulee in there instead. We got to make the Northerners happy as well as the Southerners with your pecan pie.
Yeah. I'm not even a Southern. I'm just a Midwestern, simple Midwestern folk. But that's fair. Respect and love pecan pie.
My take on pecan pie, never had it. Never tried it.
What?
Never had a bite of pecan pie. I've seen countless pecan pies left around in my lifetime. They're always like lying out in a field or something. Don't touch them. Just leave them.
Good for you, Matt.
Matt lives in the state of Georgia. I think this is going to get you taken to a CIA black site saying you've never had a pecan pie before.
Good luck, Matt.
Thank you. Let's move on quickly.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
All right, today we've each brought two players, as I said, that we are excited to draft, that we will presumably be drafting almost no matter what if we are drafting right now. We begin with you, Daigle. Your first of two players is...
We did this series, by the way, last year, our guys, quote unquote, and we did it throughout the summer months. We're starting a bit earlier this year, so... In this April edition, we have to be very careful because these are guys we are still claiming as our guys, but the draft is still looming as well. But for me, I will start out with a hotbed player, and that is Ezekiel Elliott. When I was making the RB best ball tiers, I was weighing him or Derrick Henry for RB3 overall. I eventually settled on Henry, but then I looked up at their ADPs, best ball 10s, MFFL, for instance, eighth pick, not eighth round. That'd be wild. Underdog, 10th or 11th pick, and then FFPC, 11th or 12th pick. So overall, he's still being undervalued, and it genuinely cannot be any worse than what it was last year. Career lows, of course, in rushing yards and fantasy points per game against the league's second toughest rushing schedule. So he'll presumably have an easier schedule to face this year, but also small sample, but yes, still paced for career highs with 7.5 targets weekly and Dak Prescott's 4 full starts. And then this year, they're going to have the Cowboys, Tyron Smith, Lyle Collins, Zach Martin, healthy from the beginning, whereas all of them missed a combined 36 games last year. So the outlook cannot be any better for Elliott, and the draft will not affect him negatively in any way possible, whereas it can only be positive from that point forward. So yes, I'm not saying you have to pick Elliott if you're going like zero RB or you're at the end of the first round and Travis Kelce's there, but in the middle when you're still deciding you don't know where to go, I am more than confident being overweight and ahead of everyone else on Elliott this year.
I mean, Zeke, I don't think he's missed one game in his career with injury. One game. He missed 6 with suspension. He's rested twice in week 17. But for a player for any running back, that's a remarkable stat. For a running back who handles the kind of workloads that Ezekiel Elliott does, I mean, that's just like unprecedented, like just unreal durability for a running back that we know is getting those workloads every year. And as John said, I mean, last year was basically the everything goes wrong for Zeke year. And Zeke is probably slowing down. I mean, he's taken all those reps. There's no doubt he's not going to be the same player he was early in his career. But just like this workload and this offense with this durability, I agree with John. Zeke is going to be an undervalued player. I mean, even if it's in the first round, like Zeke could very easily crack that top 3 again at running back.
As a Tony Pollard truther, I take no pleasure in reporting that John is correct. I mean, 2020 could not have been worse. You know, Pat said he's only missed one game. I feel like Ezekiel Elliott missed 11 games last year. You know, just the feel of it. Obviously, you know, it didn't happen. I mean, you know, he toughed it out. He played through some nagging injuries. Whether that was the smart play or not, who's to say, really? But he's going to be undervalued because people have a terrible taste in their mouth from last season. Dak coming back makes all the difference. And really, you know, looking at, I recently did a piece on pass catching running backs over the past 4 seasons. I mean, you know, he's always at the top every year. It doesn't matter what happens, he's always at the top. And, you know, in PPR formats, the only legitimate scoring system, a target is worth 2.5 times more than a rushing attempt. And that's tremendous usage that he gets year in and year out.
Pollard finished one game inside the top 35 among running backs last year, and that was, of course, the one game Zeke missed. Otherwise, he averaged 7 touches. Outright, is he a better player? Maybe. Honestly, he probably is, but it doesn't matter. When Mike McCarthy was hired, he knew he was getting hired with the $90 million elephant in the room in Zeke. Mm-hmm. They're not getting away from it, and thus it'll be Zeke 25, 28 touches a game no matter what we think.
The point you made a minute ago, Danny, is the one that like sticks with me, that taste that was left in people's mouths. Like, and I think it's a case where if you had Zeke on a fantasy roster, you're going to have to really be bold to take him again this year because you're just so scarred from that. But if you didn't draft him anywhere, it's a lot easier to take the plunge this year, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Okay, Pat, bring it to us. What's your first player?
It's Cameron Akers. And
Cameron. Huh? You know him personally, huh?
Not quite positive what his ADP is. John, what is around Cam Akers' ADP off the top of your head? Because I'm seeing some crazy stuff on Fantasy Football Calculator that seems maybe outdated to me, where he is currently the RB16 in PPR. And I feel like that's almost no way that is even possibly correct.
Average mid-second, he's being debated with Jonathan Taylor and, to a lesser extent, Austin Eckler right now, RB8 through 11, pretty much.
So yeah, average mid-second, an FF calculator right now in PPR, he's going in the third, the second pick of the third, which is just totally, it's basically there's no, like Cam Akers can't get too high for me, basically, for me to like not be a target, where, you know, averaged 22 carries over his final 6 games last year. He's a big play threat. Sean McVay has called him a 3-down back. He caught 30 passes his final year at Florida State. We've kind of seen both approaches. Not kind of. We have seen both backfield approaches from Sean McVay, where he had the years where he gave Todd Gurley every touch in the backfield. Now he's had the committee years. So that's a little concerning. We know he's comfortable with both approaches, and we know Daryl Henderson is worthy of being a member of a committee, but this offense was at its best when they never had to take Ty Gurley off the field. And Cam Akers basically, to me, looked like an Adrian Peterson-level power runner almost. I mean, no one's on that Adrian Peterson level, but like just like I saw like Petersonian power basically last year from Cam Akers. And I mean, as a rookie, you know, they put the offense on the rookie shoulders down the stretch. I mean, a team that was fighting for its playoff life, I think he had 28 carries in the wild card round 2 after they made the playoffs, just immense trust in a player who showed it on the field, has the room for growth. Cause again, he only caught like 2 or 3 passes a game. Even getting up to 3 or 4 would make a huge difference. But even if the passing usage doesn't increase, I mean, to me, it's almost like Derrick Henry level with, I think 20 carries is probably like the weekly floor. And there's just basically Cam Akers can basically not get too high for me. And I'm going to be all over him all summer.
I have to say that I am beyond jealous of your ability to, from the hip, come with Petersonian. I mean, what what is that? That's tremendous. I can barely sit up right now.
I had to map that out of my head because I was afraid that I would stumble over that.
Man, really, really good. Really good. I'm amazed again at my boss. So the thing with Akers is that things probably couldn't get worse, like we talked about with Zeke, than last year. And he has a huge upgrade at quarterback with Matthew Stafford. You know, defenses will probably have to be a little more honest about defending, you know, the pass, contrary to what happened. Yeah, contrary to what happened last year, where, you know, everybody knew that the team was desperately and not very successfully trying to hide Jared Goff as much as possible. So, yeah, things will get much better for Cam Akers. And we will see also, we will see his ADP rise steadily, I think, over the next few months.
We talked about mapping out Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson's touches and how it looks like there are Shanahanigans going on. But if you dig closer, you can see that it actually makes sense for their timelines of usage. And I think it's the same thing for Cam Akers. Injured the first half of the year, and then you go towards the last month of the season against the 49ers. The Rams score 0 offensive points through 3 quarters. Can't move the ball whatsoever. They got a couple field goals and a defensive score, but on the ground, they can't rush the ball and they're not throwing the ball well through the air. At the end of the third quarter into the fourth, they give Cam Akers 3 carries and he single-handedly drags them 68 yards and a touchdown. And from that point forward through the playoffs, it was all Cam Akers. There's a reason why. It's because he was the lone shining star among that backfield and on offense in that week. And from that point forward, it was all him. And so I think that carries over into this year. Yes, Daryl Henderson will still probably be involved, but the fact we're taking out Malcolm Brown altogether at least leaves vacant Brown's previous third down role, which is, again, the keys to the car needed for Akers to become a top five option. And so that is in his range of outcomes.
I do think Cam Akers will probably universally be a first-round pick by August. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, sure.
There's probably not going to be much of a discount on Cam Akers, and maybe I will start to get cold feet. But I mean, even in the 8 to 12 range in the first round, if I can get him there, that will basically be like an auto for me.
My recommendation is to have take lock. No matter what happens, stick with your take. This has always worked out for me.
Yeah, I'm going to get him. It doesn't matter. ADP gets all the way up to 1-1. I have
just,
no choice.
You just do it.
I have no choice still.
You'd hope, though, that like, because it's, you know, he didn't totally go through, you know, he didn't totally go to the moon numbers wise down the stretch. You would hope that maybe you have some prayer of him falling to the second round based on the fact that like he was good down the stretch, but it's not like he found the end zone a bunch of times or anything like that. So maybe
his numbers came close to going to the moon down the stretch, I would say.
But only two scores those last five games, I guess is what I'm looking at.
And people hopefully know that scores, you know, aren't predictive, sticky, et cetera. But yeah, I mean, I forgot he had 21 carries for 34 yards in week 17. I'm off Cam Akers, guy. I know everyone else is on Cam Akers, but I'm looking at the game logs and I'm off.
Weak.
He was hurt that week, by the way.
Denny.
Yes.
You're up.
You may have heard of him. I'm one of my guys right now that I'm taking in best ball is Julio Jones. Julio is now, according to ADP data I was looking at this morning, he's the 13th wide receiver off the board going in the late third round. John, does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. Okay. It's a big dispute among Julio Jones, and I'll let you state your case right now.
Yeah. Right. So it's hard to believe, but we finally reached the point in Julio's career where he could reasonably be your wide receiver two or possibly your wide receiver three, depending on how you build your team. You know, at the advanced age of 32, we finally have some cushion with Julio's ADP, which I think is nice. Now, yes, he missed nine games last year and, or I'm sorry, he missed seven games last year and he was pretty much gimping around as a decoy for another two games. He was fully healthy for basically five or six games. I couldn't quite nail down that number.
That's always good.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what you want, you know, in a high leverage draft pick. And, you know, larger receivers like Julio don't usually age well. And I concede that. Okay, I concede it. But here's the thing. You know, he was still at his career yards per reception average last year. He was well over his career average in yards per target. And in the games he played, including the decoy games, he had a 21% target share in those games. He was only a yard and a half under his career average in air yards per target too. So are the chances great of us getting 16 uninjured games out of Julio Jones? I would say no. But I think drafting him there gives you, like I said, that cushion. It makes me slightly more comfortable with taking him.
I mean, it's a stratospheric upside still, even for his age, that ADP. Like you said, the yards per catch remained around his career norms. The yards per game basically remained around his career norms. He was fourth in yards per route run. Last year was the first year since 2013 that he basically didn't reach 1,400 yards. He had like 1,394 in 2019. And even in this passing era, like those are just like, you don't see that from a receiver that high a floor year in and year out. And Julio, I agree. The ADP, I think Julio's ADP will probably begin to rise again too, because it is Julio Jones. People will probably come to the over the summer like, oh, wait a minute, this is Julio. This is kind of ridiculous. But even at that age, like you said, even with the profile of like a bigger receivers and the way they age, Julio has more than earned the benefit of the doubt of like you basically smash draft on that upside of that ADP every time.
You still have Calvin Ridley higher, right, Denny?
I do. Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure because that's where I'm at as well.
Yeah.
Well, Denny's a sellout. He's not all the way in.
Ridley, of course, paced for more fantasy points per game, even in the splits with Julio Jones on the field. Right. And that's including if you do the dirty work, like Denny talked about, and get rid of those three games where Julio was just a decoy and wasn't actually fully healthy. Ridley was still the go-to guy who actually finally emerged last year. And so I would think that still continues, especially if this regime shows confidence in Matt Ryan, who's still under contract through 2023 technically, and drafts someone like Kyle Pitts or Jamar Chase, or just trades back and doesn't add a quarterback who would then threaten Ryan and perhaps drag this offense down in his rookie year.
Speaking of the draft, John, going back to Ezekiel Elliott just really quick, I know I'm totally derailing the conversation. You said you didn't see any threat for Zeke in the draft. The Cowboys trading up for Kyle Pitts and converting him to running back. I'm very worried.
No one's talking about it.
No one is talking about this.
That is a first. That's a take for here.
Yeah. Anyways, Julio, yeah.
Clip that off. Clip that off, guys. I'm going to keep it in Atlanta, and I'll take Julio's teammate, the aforementioned teammate who will have absolutely no draft day discount, but I think it's going to be worth it on Calvin Ridley. I mean, we just saw this guy go for 90 catches, just under 1,400 yards, 9 touchdowns. He missed a game, and he had Dirk Cutter calling plays last year. I mean, you guys probably didn't subject yourselves to quite as much Falcons football as I did, but Cutter's play calling was absolutely head-scratching at times, you know, downright predictable at other times. I just think Ridley's prospects in an Arthur Smith offense, we could see an even higher ceiling than what he showed last year.
Over a 30% target share and over 50% of the team's air yards in those games, Julio Jones did miss for Ridley. So, yes, especially if Julio happens to miss more time, Ridley is far and away a standout wide receiver one, far and away.
Weren't like Ridley's splits, were they worse when Julio didn't play last year? Was that one of those weird fantasy stats last year?
His volume was higher, but he was obviously the only player Ryan could look around to. Because even Hayden Hurst, who was, as we've talked about, running all the routes, it just never mattered.
And I think it was part of that. I think Ridley was kind of playing banged up, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I think he played injured a lot. Yeah. And you know, Ridley is a guy where I never knew if like Calvin Ridley had like, obviously he has high end athleticism. I didn't know if he had like that like 1A level of athleticism, and maybe he still doesn't, but it doesn't even matter because he's got that 1A level of like technical dominance. And Calvin Ridley, I wasn't fully sold on until last year. And how could I not be fully sold? I mean, just a completely dominant player. And yeah, I'm all in on Calvin Ridley.
My only pushback would be, what happened to Calvin Ridley on that Monday night where he had like 11 targets, didn't catch a ball? That's all I'm saying.
Was that one of those weeks he was playing hurt?
Yeah, he was. He was hurt. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say what happened to Ridley on that play against the Chiefs, I think it was, where he was totally in the clear to score and like kind of cut back across the field, stumbled, and got brought down. That was absolutely
I remember that. I remember
week 16.
But yeah, he was banged up, Pat, in that Monday night game that I think it was against the Packers.
That's the one that jumps out. Yeah, the Packers game.
Yeah. Anyway, the potential, if Julio again struggles with injuries, a potential target monster in that offense. So even if things don't go as perfectly and with yards per reception, yards per target, he's still just going to see a ton of opportunity.
Is Calvin Ridley an Antonio Brown type player, folks? That's kind of who he reminds me of sometimes. But just the technical dominance, folks. I love it.
I feel like he's not like physically dominant.
No, Antonio Brown was kind of always underrated for his pure physical dominance at his size.
Brown would just humiliate defenders.
It's also why it's not fair that him and Ridley and DJ Moore came out in the same class, because they're always going to be compared, whereas DJ Moore is a freak athletically, and Calvin Ridley gets by on his route running, which was like the best among anyone in that class.
That's a good point. Never mind.
We're off Ridley.
Yes, we're off.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Just a quick reminder, our premium product subscriptions at NBC Sports Edge cover every sport, all sports. So right now you can still get access to NBA, NHL, and MLB premium products for 10% off any subscription. Hit the promo code GOOD10. We are back around to you, Daigle, with your second of two players.
We have talked about him in the past, so I'll keep this short and let someone else speak afterwards, but AJ Brown needs to be touted more. Wide receiver one ceiling, simply put, with a floor, I would believe, of wide receiver five, especially since we are still predicting him to have 130 plus targets this year, far more than he had last year, and at least a 30% target share this year with only Josh Reynolds and Marcus Johnson as quote unquote veterans behind him right now. So all aboard AJ Brown, pretty simple.
Yeah, I mean, he was 10th in yards after catch, which seemed low for him last year. Third in yards per route run, like was the human highlight machine as a touchdown score. He kept the big play upside while also still compiling. Is their number two receiver actually Josh Reynolds? Like, is this a hallucination? And he's the kind of guy, he's so physically dominant, where even if he's like getting bracketed, like, does it even really matter? Like, because, like, who can match up with AJ? It's just if you're, like, finding reasons to be concerned about AJ Brown, you're, like, doing, like, the definition of nitpicking. There's just nothing really that you can – there's no hole to, like, puncture in the case for AJ Brown.
He had issues with both knees last year. Is that correct?
He had surgery on both, right?
I mean, major issues, and he still had a really good season after he came back from, you know, from injury or from, you know, sitting out after I think he hurt his right knee in week one. So things didn't really go great last year for him, and he's still shaped up as a dominant, you know, fantasy producer. So like I said, I think I've mentioned this now twice, but I'm going to do it again. He is the meme. There is no limit.
It's, we're going to delete that. I've heard that too. I don't know if I've heard that before. That is good. And AJ Brown was basically like a figment of your imagination in September because he got hurt early and then they had the COVID stuff and it wasn't really till week five. And where did he finish in like raw fantasy points, like third or fourth, like something? So just like
top five,
a legendary season.
And so we have that. We have his rookie year where he didn't even start the first half of the year. He was playing behind Tajay Sharpe, I believe it was. So what if we get a full season now in a new offense, perhaps a new offense, even though they just promoted from within, that unlike last year where AJ Brown was still part of the scheme, it's not like they were actually forcing him targets, although he did see a career high in targets per game. He was still running his routes underneath, and they were just going by their reads, Tannehill, and getting him the ball. What if like they're actually jamming him targets this year? What if they're calling plays for him, which is out of the ordinary from the past 2 years this year? There are just so many explosions in his range of outcomes. I can't imagine him failing. I genuinely cannot.
What if the Titans force the ball to their best player? That's just one.
Imagine.
You know.
Well, Ferk
Daddy. Yeah, you don't talk about him that way. Just one quick question. So they promoted tight ends coach Todd Downing to be the offense coordinator. Daigle, it sounds like you're not worried about any of the Arthur Smith magic being gone with a new play caller.
I've talked about this a little in the past, but I think the worry is good for AJ Brown because if the offense is less efficient, that means they are behind and they're still jamming targets to Brown, which is best case scenario. So even the flaws in losing Smith, I don't know if they help AJ Brown, but I don't think they hurt him.
Okay, Pat, you are up and please use this player's proper full first name as you did with Cameron Akers. Thank you.
Well, it's just Brandon.
Oh, okay.
His name is Brandon Ayuk. Okay. He's a young man who lives in the Bay Area of California. And so the concern people probably have from Brandon Ayuk was a lot of his production came with lots of injuries around him last year. The 49ers, of course, are changing quarterbacks. But to me, like, the production that came while other people were hurt is like a great sign. Like, he was a rookie and they were willing to totally lean on him. He had five or more receptions, six of his final seven games last year. Just extreme commitment to a rookie, a first-round rookie. So someone they've clearly valued highly, someone they were, you know, very confident in. And then they backed up their word, basically, with a huge commitment to their rookie receiver. Not just down the stretch, kind of like from the jump last year. And whereas, like, Deebo Samuel kind of is so reliant on these, like, behind-the-line-of-scrimmage targets, Brandon Ayuk can do both. Like, he can get those cherry-picking behind the line of scrimmage targets, but they also seem to have a lot more faith in him as a downfield receiver than they do in Deebo Samuel. And just with what he put on film as a rookie, just the way he, like, rewarded their confidence in him as a first round pick and as, like, kind of an emergency number one receiver. I'm not worried about the quarterback change. And Brandon Ayuk was just someone I was very intrigued by coming into the season. And clearly Kyle Shanahan was very intrigued by. And he lived up to those high expectations and probably exceeded them even for the 49ers. And, like, Brandon Ayuk, if I can get him as, like, my wide receiver two this year, like, I'm ecstatic in basically every draft.
Why get him as your wide receiver two? We can have him as your wide receiver three. Think about it.
That's a good point.
I'm kidding.
There will be drafts where that happens, yeah. Probably. He could have a seesaw. He'll have, like, a very narrative-driven ADP, I feel like.
Yeah.
And, like, the narrative will be changing all offseason. The 49ers ADP narratives, I feel like, will be kind of like ebbing and flowing all offseason.
For sure. It's good to know that the team clearly knows what they have in Ayuk, and they're not confused about how to use them, when to use them, how much to use them. They made that pretty clear last year, both when Deebo Samuel was out of the lineup and when he was in the lineup, that they understand, you know, what they have. And what they have is, a guy who functions much more as a traditional receiver than Deebo, and is good in all aspects of the game, including, you know, taking those, you know, bubble screens or the handoffs from Garoppolo across the formation. You know, those, what am I thinking of? Jet sweeps. Anyway, he's versatile. They want him to have the ball in his hands. And I don't know if his ADP reflects that. And further, I don't think that it will reflect that going forward.
Hayden's gone 1 week and Denny forgets what a jet sweep is. A very zoomer play. Actually also a very old school play.
What I appreciate most about Ayuk's rookie year is that not only was he wide receiver 1-2 with 8.5 targets per game in the 6 contests he played without Deebo Samuel, he was a wide receiver 1-2 with 7.5 targets per game in the 6 games he played with Deebo Samuel. So either way, a standout, whether Debo's healthy or not. That's all that matters. It's one of the safest wide receivers you can pick in best ball, redraft, whatever, this upcoming year.
And do you think, like, Deebo kind of, like, burst his bubble last year? Like, Deebo, you know, running backs get typecast. I think Deebo might have got himself, like, typecast as a wide receiver. Like, maybe someone where even if, like, he is capable of doing more damage down the field, where they just, like, won't try to do that anymore. And they're going to make him, like, purely this, like, a gadget type. Yeah. I mean, it's possible that he still has untapped upside. But he like, went a long way towards typecasting himself last year, Deebo Samuel.
Well, his one big game against the Rams came, I think, when Ayuk was out. Is that? Does my memory?
Familiar. I don't know. 2020 was a long time ago.
It was.
There was a pandemic.
12 years ago.
Yeah.
I just want to say for those, you know, listening, that we got a rare human prayer emoji from Pat here during John's spiel about Ayuk. So we have that going for us.
I actually do that all the time, but we're making our points that we don't notice the prayer emoji a lot. But it's a very common video podcast tick of mine.
Screenshot that, somebody.
Okay. Are we done with Ayuk? Danny, that brings us to you.
Yeah. Terry McLaurin. He's going right around where Julio is going at the end of the third or the beginning of the fourth round as the 15th receiver off the board. I feel like that is pretty low for where he could finish now that he doesn't have one of the worst, if not the worst, quarterback situation in the entire league. So last year, he had one quarterback in Alex Smith who averaged 5.3 adjusted yards per attempt. And the other, Dwayne Haskins, somehow averaged less than that, 5.1 adjusted yards per attempt. Those were both among the lowest in the entire league. You know, the team in itself had 16 passing touchdowns between four quarterbacks last year. What is that? I was unaware of that fact. 16.
It sounds like a 70s Super Bowl winning Steelers team. That was probably the NFL record then.
That's the highest testosterone offense I've ever heard of. And McLaurin, by the way, had four of those. So he still somehow managed four touchdowns despite only 16 being thrown by all of his quarterbacks. This goes back to the fact that as great as Alex Smith, his comeback journey was, he was terrible last year. Like, I feel bad saying that, but really, really a horrible quarterback in 2020.
Hansel, Denny.
I'm sorry, but I'll take it.
Cutting that out.
Yeah.
All right. At least let me finish this rant here. With Ryan Fitzpatrick or really anyone playing quarterback for Washington this year, I think things get much better. He easily has top 10 in his range of outcomes. Who is to say, you know, top five is out of those range of outcomes? I certainly won't, especially if he continues to dominate targets. 25% target share last year in the 15 games he played. And, you know, look, depending on how you build your roster, you know, it's up to you. Oh, no. This is a free country. Okay. you can have him as your wide receiver three. That's pretty sweet, I think.
So yeah, where does that put Julio? Sorry.
Julio is then your wide receiver nine.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Terry, he finally has a quarterback who's going to pull the trigger. Like, as you outlined, Dwayne Haskins was somehow even worse than Alex Smith in that department. And Terry, so he established the big play upside as a rookie. As a sophomore, I mean, he compiled like few in the league. He had 7+ receptions 9 times. But the big plays just weren't there because the targets were all coming not so close to the line of scrimmage, but just like intermediate target, one intermediate target after another, like almost never taking shots down the field to Terry McLaurin. And we know he can do that. And we also know he was playing hurt for a lot of the second half last season. So he's going to have a quarterback that will actually give him the opportunity to make plays down the field. He'll be back to 100% health. And he's the whole package for fantasy because he can make the big plays. He can compile. He can score touchdowns. You know, Terry's a guy where you cannot let that – it was a very disappointing second half of the season, but that was for all like reasons beyond his control. And you know, top 10, I'd be disappointed if he wasn't top 10.
Right.
And top five is very much in the range of outcomes.
When Case Keenum is the best quarterback you've ever played with, you know there's still room to grow. The two stats I keep coming back to that reflect Terry McLaurin and just my outlook on this Washington offense, new and improved Washington offense, is that Alex Smith led the league in passes behind the line of scrimmage, passing rate behind the line of scrimmage, whereas Ryan Fitzpatrick led the league in passing rate 6 to 10 yards out from the line of scrimmage, meaning they will push the ball downfield more. Also, Curtis Samuel, who I think is a tremendous pickup and will help move the chains on the field, I don't know about his fantasy outlook, but I do think it's good that he's not going to logically overlap with McLaurin because he got this contract because of Matt Rhule's regime, which used him for a career-high depth target downfield and also from carries from the backfield, whereas under Norvin Scott Turner, which is why he reunited with them, he had a career low depth of target. He was used totally different just 2 years ago. And so again, I don't think he's going to be down the field with McLaurin, making McLaurin the target to prioritize for Fitzpatrick. So yes, there's just no one getting in McLaurin's way for perhaps that top 10 outlook.
Daigle, I appreciate you looking up that Case Keenum thing because I wanted to look at who the best quarterback McLaurin has played with, but I was too upset.
Well,
it was too much. I didn't want to do it.
It's either Case Keenum or Kyle Allen. I'll let you debate which one.
No, it's Taylor Henneke's who it really is. I mean,
he was good for that one game.
That one game was by far the best quarterbacking. Terry McLaurin, what did he even do in that game? He was like playing on one leg.
Yeah.
By the time the house got there.
I think Heinicke, because of that one game, is now a top 5 quarterback in Washington franchise history.
Yes.
No, just by the way.
We haven't talked about Washington's best quarterback last year. Logan Thomas was 1 for 1, 28 yards. So
we should have a podcast based just on who was the best Washington quarterback.
I thought you were going to say based on just Logan Thomas. Like, we're going to run out of content in 10 minutes.
Denny could probably go 8 to 10 on Logan Thomas, I think.
Definitely. And I appreciate, you know, the media won't acknowledge what you just said. So I appreciate you getting it out there.
Did you know that he was a quarterback?
I was unaware until now.
Did you know he got benched in his bowl game because he was so bad at quarterback? Gosh.
Did you know he was an immediately horrific draft pick by the Arizona Cardinals and no one had any idea what they were doing?
That was Bruce Arians, wasn't it?
It was.
Good grief.
One name left, and that name is my pick. It's J.K. Dobbins. He finished out his rookie year with 805 yards, 9 rushing touchdowns, 6.0 yards per carry. We had to wait forever for this to happen. He finally got his extended chance, 495 yards and 7 scores his last 6 games. I understand the pushback here. He probably won't catch a lot of passes. And maybe more importantly, so much of his success was tied to touchdowns. They're not predictive. But I would also say, don't we think Dobbins is going to get every chance to score a lot close to the goal line this upcoming season? I mean, from my vantage point, he was quite good near the goal line.
I mean, Denny, do you want to do it? Do you want to tell Matt about Gus Edwards?
I was going
to put... I will say, hold on, sorry, let me cut you off. I picked Dobbins, and then I saw that video clip, and I was like, oh boy, here we go. Anyways,
you got to get Denny wound up on Gus Edwards. And John, I think, too. I think, are we all members of the Edwards Hive? I think maybe we are.
I think so, yes. Right, John? Yes.
Correct.
Okay, so Matt, I didn't put Gus Edwards as one of my two players today because I didn't want to, once again, get in a screaming match with you on air. I think Dobbins is fine if you're going for like the RB, kind of RB heavy build. You're going to want the primary ball carrier in this offense, period. And you're right. He did, I don't have the numbers in front of me for whatever reason, but he did have a lot of opportunity inside the 10, inside the 5-yard line last year, especially after Mark Ingram was phased out of the offense. Of course, Ingram is gone now to the expansion team in Houston. And I think, you know, Dobbins will have all the opportunity in the world. Yes.
Yeah, I think the good news for Dobbins is, so Gus Edwards is like a threat and like is going to remain a big part of this offensive attack, this offensive approach. I think Gus Edwards' role will probably just stay the same, whereas J.K. Dobbins will hopefully be inheriting like that true number one role, that old Mark Ingram role, where he's going to be averaging, because like a running back can almost average 5.5 yards per carry like in his sleep in this offense. And Matt, you said like touchdowns aren't sticky, but in this offense, I mean, they kind of are. Even with Lamar Jackson vulturing so many rushing scores, I mean, this is just a team that's going to score a ton of rushing touchdowns. And Gus will remain a very important role player and like an absolutely elite running back insurance option. But J.K. Dobbins he's taken the Mark Ingram 2019 role, because that role didn't really exist last year in 2020. The Ravens could never quite figure out their backfield. But if he's like, how many carries did Mark Ingram have in 2019? Like 200 to 220? Like J.K. Dobbins, like 200 to 220 carries, like that's going to be a big time problem in fantasy.
As you know, Matt, when we disagree on the show, we don't just disagree like normal people. We bring it to the table. We put skin in the game. I believe I still owe Norris like 4 steaks, even though I did get a respectful amount of licks in at the end of last year. Having said that, we have one virtual bet on the table right now with Denny and I, Jameis over Andy, which why would we even bet that? And I would like to present to you, because Dobbins is currently going ahead in all 3 best ball formats, Dobbins over Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I would like the latter if you choose to make that bet.
Fantasy points, half PPR?
PPR, fantasy points, end of year. We include injuries. We include everything.
We're going full or half?
Full.
I mean, I'm going to say yes. I don't feel great about it. Because if in a full PPR,
do you have CEH ranked over Dobbins?
I probably won't, but I don't play full PPR, so I'm going to do it. I'm going to say yes. Yes.
That's
Denny's eyes.
Man, I mean, that's like a stunning admission. I mean,
what is it? A moral stance?
It usually is. If you don't play PPR, that is usually like, again, it's a religious thing. We can't get into that on the podcast.
Wait, no, I play PPR. I don't play full PPR. What was the stunning omission?
No, full PPR is both. PPR. Matt is a religious awakening from Matt.
I honestly haven't thought about CEH enough clearly based on what you guys are saying.
Okay, well, you already agreed, so we're moving on. Dobbins, who I believe is currently best ball's most overvalued player, against CEH, who I have, who I think is best ball's most undervalued player currently.
I like it. I like my odds. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Sounds like a perfect setup for me.
Do it. Steak.
Okay, that's the end of our list of eight. Our guys for 2021, the short list for April. More to come on that in the months ahead. Anything you want to point to on the NBC Sports Edge website, fellas?
My mock draft 1.0 just released. I'm just going to do one more only for competition purposes the night before round one. And then best ball tiers are up there as well. Denny, why are you laughing? Because competition means no sex.
Prayer emoji?
No.
Wow. Which is true. That's what I thought you were.
I was. I can't help but laugh every time he does this.
The prayer emoji live.
Prayer emoji. I can't. I just.
Someone
just
who's watching the video at home, clip that off and use it actually as a meme that we can put around on Twitter.
Please. I can't do that. I'm not technically.
This gray shirt. Wait till I'm wearing a more colorful shirt.
But also, mock draft competitions means no sex. So yes.
See, I didn't know it was an either or.
Oh, they're mutually exclusive.
It is.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm about to tell my wife. I have a piece that went up yesterday on how pass catching running backs fit into the zero running back strategy. This is so so narrowly focused that I tweeted it out yesterday. And literally got zero engagement. So
really?
you know you're doing well. You know you're really resonating, and you're relevant when you tweet something out to an audience of fantasy football freaks, and no one cares about it. So it's up there if you want to give it a read.
I'm gonna go give it a like.
I'm gonna retweet it after the pod. But I was in a vaccine drunk yesterday. By the way, I was tired. I'll retweet that after the pod. Dan.
Thanks.
All right. That'll do it, Daigle, Pat, Denny. Thanks. Thanks to all of you for listening. We will see you next week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.